Blog Talk Radio.
Nothing like talking about Freemasonry if you're a Mason. Oh, my goodness. This is Masonic Effects. You found us, and we're so grateful to have you here. Freemasonry is a calling for some of us, a preoccupation for others, a curiosity for many, and it has endured for hundreds and hundreds of years in one way, shape, or form. Tonight, we're going to talk about the rise and progress of Freemasonry and do that through some essential questions. There is a life and a vitality about Freemasonry that is remarkable. It is in a constant state of transformation. And the best part of the best of Freemasonry still lies ahead of us. Still, that audacious group, particularly here in this country, just remarkable. But we have no exclusive claim to being audacious. Here's what I want to start with today. This is the 18th of September. We're very close to the autumnal equinox in 4 days. That balance point when you and I can actually claim to be in balance. This is the 262nd day of the year. But I do that often. 104 days left of celebration of 2016. This is the sesquicentennial of the three battalions, Halton, Peel, and help me with it, boys. What was the other one? It'll come before the end of the show. Commemorating the battles of these battalions, and I want to offer proper kudos to them. I'll find a little slip with the proper titles on them. This is Peel, Dufferin, and Halton regiments, the Battle of Honors from the War of 1812. Detroit, Queenston, Niagara, and the defense of Canada between 1812 and 1815. Also commemorating the Great War, Ypres, Festubert, both in 1915, Ypres, and again in 17, Mount Sorel, Somme in 1916, Arras in 1917 and 1918, Hill 70, how tragic. Amiens, the Hindenburg Line, pursuit of Mons, and then the Second World War, Sicily, 1943, Italy, 1943 to 1945, and Northwest Europe, 1944 to North 1945, and the war in Afghanistan. So, our hats are off to the Lawrence Scots, Peel, Dufferin, and Halton regiments. And if you're so inclined, there's a certain 12-year-old Glenfarclas that's been produced, selected by the Lawrence to commemorate this proud year. Anyway, there you have it. Back to nothing better way to start the show than with an honor like that. People in battle. I don't aggrandize war. Never will. Never make that mistake. It's about honoring people willing to do a task that has no amount of gratitude sufficient to the sacrifice, the potential. But I want to move this sideways a little bit and talk about some of the clouds, the dust. We'll go through history of masonry. It's not like we can walk down a clean path. You know, you've heard that statement so often. Have you ever asked yourself whether it's a clean, pristine, well-edged path? I think not. I think there's enough evidence that it's a dusty path, that places that it's murky. Some places it's just ridiculously treacherous. But it's a challenge that once started is hard to walk away. It's hard to really stop without sort of looking over the next ridge and seeing where it goes. Rather, a lot of embroidered material appeared earlier in the proceedings of the first Grand Lodge, which had taken prior to the 24th of June, 1723. But the records have not survived as that is the date of the first entry of the first minute book. There is nothing that is official anywhere earlier than that date in England. Let's just presume here that we're talking about the difference between governance and we're talking about the masonry. And in that latter respect, masonry, we're bracketing about 600 years of discussion and fatigued effort. But there's embroidered material came out, and it was copied in years later and put into circulation. Some very imaginative points which grafted into Masonic traditional history, which remain until the founders of Quattro Coronati Lodge set a course of authenticity. They were competing in some fantastical claims. So if you're moving forward as serious-minded people, you want to at least have a sense of whether we're being foolish on purpose or whether we're just clueless. Do we not know or we just don't care? Whoa. So the founders, wasn't the only people doing it, but that was a benchmark that we can recognize that tells us thereafter there was also an effort at scholarly research, authenticating information. And they required supportive evidence whenever it was possible or the statement that at any conclusion was speculative upon whatever circumstances could be summoned. And there had been a strong tendency to create a history for Freemasonry with royal patronage at a much earlier date than that actually happened. And that book had a list of kings of England from which few were excluded. R.F. Gould commented thus, "The most noticeable exclusions being Richard I and James II. We are told the king, with Grand Master Rivers, the architects, nobility, Lord Mayor, aldermen, and bishops, leveled the footstone at St. Paul's Cathedral in due form, AD 1673. Also, that in 1710, in the 8th year of the reign of Queen Anne, our worthy Grand Master Wren, who had drawn the design of St. Paul's, had the honor to see it finished in a magnificent taste, and to celebrate with the fraternity the capstone of so noble and large a temple. But after the celebration of the capstone in 1710, our good old Grand Master Wren, being struck with age and infirmities, did, from this time forward, 1710, retire from all manner of business, and on account of his disability could no more attend the lodges in visiting and regulating their meetings as usual. this occasion the number of regular lodges to be greatly reduced, but they regularly assembled in hopes of having again a noble patron at their head. That's from the History of Freemasonry from R.F. Gould, 1884. The framework of the Multipacus account had been provided by the Reverend James Anderson, whose record of it in the second edition of the Constitutions, published in 1738, derived from his contemporaries who were concerned in the inauguration. Anderson was appointed junior grand warden by the Duke of Wharton on the 17th of January, 1723, and in his time displayed ability as a collator, although he too was apt to be rather imaginative. However, he recorded useful evidence and guidance for those who were to piece together much of the pattern of events from that time. At the same meeting mentioned above, he recorded the new Book of Constitutions, now in print, which was again approved with the addition of the ancient manner of constituting a lodge. Things were fluid. That speaks of masonry not as a defined process with rules and policies and clear and strict governance. Masonry was a concept. It was more a theme, an attitude. So there was much conjecture about the beginnings. And you can imagine this, as we see the writer saying here, the embroidered history was repeated and began to be taken in as part of our traditional history. It was made up. So how could we possibly sift through what was made up and fanciful and what was true? Well, that's been the task ever since, hasn't it? Here's something that I want to add. This is from an interesting book that came into my possession years ago. It's called The Mysteries of Freemasonry. And it is Mysteries of Freemasonry, or an exposition of the religious dogmas and customs of the ancient Egyptians, their identity with the order of modern masonry, with some remarks on the metamorphosis of Apuleius, with numerous illustrative woodcuts by John Fellows, A.M. This is printed in this copy is 1866. The original object of the secret rites of Freemasonry has been a subject of inquiry for upwards of 600 years, and the enigma seems not to have been satisfactorily solved. The initiated, as well as those without the pale of the order, are equally ignorant of their derivation and import. What mote it be is a question as difficult of solution now as when first propounded by King Henry VI of England. The intention of this work is to endeavor to unravel the intricate web in which the mystery is involved by tracing the order back to its source, and by showing its intimate connection and similitude to institutions more ancient. Put it beyond a doubt, and it sprang from and is a continuation of the rites and ceremonies observed in these establishments. Had a work taken notice of by the Abbé Barrault fallen into the hands of the editor, he probably would have saved much trouble in the prosecution of this research. We recommend, he says, to our reader to peruse the treatise of a most learned and zealous Mason dedicated. He leaves no stone unturned throughout antiquity to prove the identity of the ancient mysteries of Eleusis, of the Jews, of the Druids, and of the Egyptians with those of Freemasonry. In pursuit of this course, it becomes necessary to take a transient view of the dogmas and customs of Egypt in the remotest periods of its history. For it appears evident that this country was the salient point from which the religious observances of the ancient world commenced. 1866, this was a bona fide position. What are emphatically called the mysteries is but another name for religion. And an exposition of what they consisted is, of course, embraced in the subject of forming a parallel with the rites of Masonry. Independent of the main design of the work, these topics in themselves possess great interest as matters of curiosity, which is enhanced by observing the close affinity which they bear to the practices of the Masonic order at the present day. Oh my. You and I have no idea how broad this little book casts its net for the roots of searching for the that Big Bang moment of Freemasonry. And it begins with, true to the author's introduction, the ancient Egyptians, death and resurrection of Osiris. It's got it all. The sixth book of Virgil's Aeneid, and opinions of Masonry. So you can see, we can see, that these claims are interesting, but we don't know if they're fanciful or not. The interesting part is when we accept and embrace the idea that time is very, very kind to men, very, very kind. And as we're going to hear in a later episode of Masonic Effects, Duff Cooper, the Viscount Norwich, who was very active and influential in the Second World War in England, points out in the title of his first book, Old Men Forget. So there is some blessing in that. But the concern is whether or not we are forgetting things that are essential, that need to be understood in an unvarnished way, not the propagandist weapon, that will lead our next generation to a continued awareness of what we've been through. How do we pass on that knowledge? So, as we know and look at each other and realize that old men forget, we take steps to ensure that the essentials are not forgotten. That mathematics of history, the things that do not yield, that are reliable. So far, our reliable history is very, very flexible, very, very flexible, malleable. So grab your favorite plate full of treats and your beverage. We're going to listen to a little Keith Jarrett. This is a solo concert from Tokyo in 1984. And sit back, catch your breath. We'll be right back. by the way, 71-year-old man. Talented hands, talented mind. Commentary is, what if masonry never existed? I get a little bit tired of hearing about arguments on the worth, and sometimes I'm just, I confess I'm not the most embracing Mason. I have work to do. I'm imperfect. And some of the things I hear about the art craft get under my skin, particularly when they're coming from brethren who haven't really done much work. And I have to be continuously reminded that that this material, much of this material, is for those who can understand it. I shy away from those types of comforts because, you know, it seems to contain a flavor of conceit. Not the individual conceits that I have about myself and the world around me, but perhaps hubris. Some understand, some don't. Well, as I get to be this age, what am I now, 66? I've accepted that as a fact of life. Some get it, some don't. Some don't know, and some don't care. But I resent the notion that a person of whatever ability can't develop themselves with effort, because that too is something that I accept in the world that I live in. I'm constantly pleasantly surprised when people that I thought were washed up, were damaged, prove me wrong, prove us all wrong, overcome bigotry and bias. At one point or another, we were all subject to that. Me and my background from the hundreds of years ago from the clan chiefs that put us off our land and displaced members of his own clan for his own gain, such as the ignominious history of the clans of Scotland. Loyalty. I'm reminded every time I hear the Campbells are coming, played by a pipe band. This isn't necessarily an honor. If I remember the tragedy and what they did to McDonald's. Murder. What if masonry never existed is a question that helps us answer, and I think come to a clearer, cleaner sense of purpose. And I put that question to you. What if it never existed? What difference would it make? It takes a mature mind to ask essential questions. Who am I? What is my purpose? It is the passage of time that creates a proper atmosphere for these searches of conscience. Of course, Masonic effects began asking that question that leads to a truthful sense of self. What would the world be like if I never existed? Would it be an impatient audience listening to me describe my mind's? Wouldn't it be an impatient audience listening to me describe my mind's sense of my place in the order of the universe? Of course it would. Everybody wants to do that for himself, not listen to somebody else's gig. If a man, or as one wag would say, one wag reminded me, it sucks to be you. True. He can ask himself. Today, we ask in a much more general sense, what would the world be like if masonry never existed? And we begin in the Socratic method to probe meaning with a question. How do we know we have a purpose? I didn't have enough pages to finish this thought. This will run on and hopefully continue on in your room. Masonry is not famous for being a period of influence. It does not encourage the dominance of new beliefs over what exists in your mind. Masonry uses a unique language of discovery and study taught in metaphor and symbols. It tells us stories that reveal principles of life, how to survive, looking beyond appearance, the darkness of greed, avarice, and ignorance, reliability of maths and scientific evidence, and in the same instance, the limits of humanity to be of one mind. Masonry does not produce anything, but it galvanizes the contribution of thousands of men into an order of those who do produce. In this sense, it is a mirror of ourselves in history. What I believe it produces that is so valuable is a counterpoint to hubris, arrogance, and greed. Masonry argues the importance of insight and study. It assumes leadership is a surface, and it dares to speak to the essential aspects that are common to all men, posing essential questions. This is the work for the singular mind, the contemplative mind. Is this a valid purpose for the existence of Freemasonry? I'll put that to you. Where else would this be emphasized? It lets us reflect while we surge forward into the opportunities of the future. Is that sufficiently valid? I think any reasonable man would just have to say, well, of course. But then stop to think, is that notion essential? Well, it helps us to live with a sense of contentment, not the ludicrous giggle happiness, but contentment at the end of the day. Do you bring that? Does your time out with your friends bring you to that point of comfort? Or are you left in a constant state of turmoil? Freemasonry has failed you then. Freemasonry is not a rooting material for anger and dissension. It's a time for reflection. So what if Masonry never existed? We speak a common language. In a time when there are cultural and tribal differences, you know, we revisit that around the world at different times, but in a continuous kind of a way. Some cultures and societies attempt a symmetry. We see that emphasized in the way people dress. Here in North America, we has been embraced the culture of the individual. So now we see the pendulum come back because the culture of the individual, like any culture, cultural sense of our relationship to the greater good has limits. Does the individual's point of view prevail over the greater good of the masses? Well, no. But it's not to invalidate that each one of us has a unique perspective on our existence and on the world around us. Masonry speaks in a voice that is understood. In that respect, it's universal. I would argue, if I may, if Freemasonry has been ponderous for hundreds of years because it's building a global culture. The aim is for unity, for all people not to give up what they are and who they are, but to entertain this otherness, that in addition to your existence and to your belief patterns is the potential for humanity to connect around certain givens. And we, above all, hail the primary. It threads its way through all of the major organized religions of the world. I was taught this when I was just a boy. It's called the Golden Rule. Don't do, and it comes down to us from Greece and from all the, from Egypt, from Mesopotamia, from Persia, China, different ways, shapes, and forms. Only do to others the things that would be satisfying to you, would be acceptable to you. I agree with some of the Confucian notion, but not the relegation of women to the bottom of the cultural and social strata. I think that's just ridiculous. Was then, and I, from my perspective, and it is today, whether some despot would have forced that claim, ridiculous. But the idea of not creating any inconvenience to anyone as you go through your daily routine, go through your life, I think is a noble way of living. It's an awareness. Don't create inconvenience. Can you live without inconveniencing another person, another creature? Well, it is possible, I can attest. If you're one of those people that feel that life is running through your fingers like grains of sand, and you're wondering if you can ever grasp it, well, yeah, you can. But you change the grip. You let time flow toward you and you with it. Albert Einstein explained that the only reason that time exists is so that everything doesn't happen at the same moment. So we have time. Oh, that happened yesterday. That's planned for tomorrow. What does that, when we get sloppy in our thinking and lazy in our thinking, what does that do about us living in the moment? We puff up our chest and walk around talking about this as if we've discovered it. Really? Well, that just reinforces the notion that we're as out of step with the world around us as we ever were. Not everybody comes to these points of view. Not everybody can understand them. Not everybody needs to. And not everybody needs to do that today. So it puts us in a healthy balance with the world around us when we can understand the value and role, the Masonic ethics, the principles, philosophy of the order that need to understand, and the effort to understand things that are difficult. Some understanding comes easier than others. Other tasks. For some, it's easier to grasp maths. For others, philosophy. For others, metaphor. Then we all rely on the dreamers, the artists, the scientists, the physicists, who answer questions that don't have obvious solutions or answers. When what Masonry does, that is sort of a hidden little secret, is that it fosters curiosity. It fosters critical thinking, not criticism, critical thinking, analysis. It encourages us to ask why and to not follow the thinking of another person, but to develop our own ideas, to own, to take responsibility for ourselves. The beauty of Freemasonry is found in what this does to confidence. But at a time, 600 years ago, that sense of global nature was abstract, mightily abstract. But it nevertheless had been articulated in some religions, some philosophies. And in the 60s, when we first saw that picture from outer space of Earth, this blue and white ball floating in this darkness, was altering. Of course, people who had this illusion of power based on the past will want to cling to that. They will cling desperately to any shred of authority, because without trying to convince us that the authority and authenticity comes from the past, they have nothing to contribute. So the question that we hear today from our younger brethren is, what have you done for me lately? Oh my goodness, what upstarts? You invented the light bulb, and that patent was stolen by somebody. You created the vehicle, a vehicle, and that idea was stolen by somebody. You flew years before the Wright brothers, but that claim was stolen by others. It's a little bit naughty of us to go through our life assuming that what we've been taught is accurate. Time reveals so much, and it's revealing so much about Masonry. Now, we didn't create Masonry, and Masonry wasn't necessarily invented. It is as it is. It was as it was. But we were able to talk about it, and that means we're able to, when we start to talk about things, we start to measure, then these things come into existence. So was there a point? There was a point, but was there a purpose? Can you, apparently not, unless you and I can explain what that purpose is. So what is the purpose of the order in your thinking that has endured for 600 years? Was it foolishness? Was it a way of idling away our time? I don't think we would exist in to this day if we were dependent on attendance. Fill a room, that's attendance, and is that all it takes in order for Masonry to endure? Really? So just attend the classes at a university, that's all it requires, and we're going to give you an acknowledgement that you have passed certain standards. I don't think so, gentlemen. I just don't think so. It's just not enough. We can say it, but it rings hollow. Now we have to go and top up our Kool-Aid here at Masonic Effects. Here's a little Duke Ellington solo piano concert from, oh man, this is back in the 80s in Australia. Check it out, Duke Ellington. Brother Duke Ellington. Thank you. Ellington. Thank you. Beautifully done. Beautifully done. This, I think, illustrates a great deal about what Freemasonry is. Freemasonry doesn't produce the talent in that man's musical ability. Doesn't produce the ability to research and qualify business decisions, banking decisions, so that they're accurate and presume a slight statistical edge that leads to success. Masonry doesn't do that. Masonry doesn't cause a person to study and concentrate and keep repeating the work until it's committed to memory. It doesn't create the ability to calm your own anxiety as you're aware of the importance of the exams that you sit. You're aware of how much you care about your partner and how important your partner is and what life will be like when your partner's not there. Better not to care. Better to be the fool, to be ignorant of that concern until the day comes when you can look foolish and lost. Where have you been all your life? Nope. Masonry doesn't produce. What it does is it galvanizes the efforts of a lot of people so that in assessing the life lived, you're able to look beyond the scars and problems and look at the character, not what happened to the individual, but how they reacted to the things that happened in their life. The resilience. And when over the centuries you combine all of these efforts together, it goes from a stream to a torrent. Freemasonry didn't create Charles Darwin. It didn't create Pythagoras. It didn't create Osiris or Plato or Aristotle or Galen. It didn't create any of that. Those people had talents. Mozart wasn't taught by Masonry. But what Masonry in a term does is convey an introduction to that amalgam, that group of people that have existed throughout time. And at the end of the day, if we're asking the question, did it matter if they lived? They made a contribution. They made a contribution in their own way. It's not for us to shy away from this, the hubris in North America or around the world that claims that there is celebrity. Everybody pulls their socks on one at a time. Everybody pulls their pants up one leg at a time. Or you're very stressed. You know what I'm saying here. We're all the same, essentially. But do we have compassion? Remember, Solomon didn't ask for power. He asked for the capacity to overcome his being slighted. He asked for a forgiving heart. Sort of makes a mockery of the notions of our history that we've allowed to occur that have simply tried to define humanity as a clamor for power and dominance. It's never been the case. It's a particular narrow view of our own history. And in fact, it's evidence against that history that is Freemasonry. The violence of war never solved anything, never solves a problem. We wait for understanding, for reason, to bring the various factions together. Meanwhile, once people get the taste of blood and fear, they're destined, they're scarred, they're damaged. And more so, those are the people that need a counterbalance. They need to believe in something, something that is true. And what is true is that good men can come together, can exercise or attempt to exercise a life of humility and carry on to make contributions and live a life that is quiet and modest and contributes to the greater good, to the stranger, to the person that doesn't share the same language, to the person that doesn't share the same customs or culture or background. But as a brother, we allow ourselves to engage, to extend a welcome, because we understand his commitment to the same thing that we've committed to the craft, that he's gone through this common experience of the initiation process. What we don't know is whether he has reason and ability. We don't know that. But we don't walk around looking for that. We don't. We look for a friendly gesture. We look for compatibility. Not for judgment and ridicule. No, we leave that for, that's left for fools. Everyone around the world has that potential. Everyone, 7.3 billion. But to say that there is equality in the world, come on now. Some struggle not at all, and some struggle and die. So we have much work to do as Masons, as an influence, as a trend, as a way of thinking. You and all our brethren collectively engender a sense of hope and connection of the past into the future. What can I say? I might be making sense only because we're coming up to the autumnal equinox. Just in a couple of days, we're going to be experiencing the harvest moon. Harvest moon is the first full moon occurring just before the equinox, closest to the autumnal equinox. We've just passed that. And the hunter's moon is the one following it. That's kind of cool. We found these in the early 18th century, of course. That's when we were being born, birthed, as a governance structure. So we see harvest moon being created around 1706, and hunter's moon around 1710, in the addition of the British Apollo. And the term is attributed to country people, our ancestors. So enjoy the harvest moon coming up. Enjoy the harvest moon. It's at apogee when the moon is closest to the earth, and it looks so huge. So we've got a gibbous moon just slightly. It's been a pleasure having you join us today, joining you and trying to make a bit of sense out of the life that we're living and the purpose, the collective purpose that we share. Absolute pleasure. I hope you can commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. And I can't resist. It's a Canadian singing his heart out. And bye.
Oh.